Hello, world. This is Chris Abalo's podcast experiment, and I am Chris Abalo. Welcome to the show. Thank you for subscribing, for liking, for following the show on Instagram and Twitter at Cape Pod, and for supporting the show on Patreon, patreon.com/CapePod. We very much appreciate it because we're here every single Monday to bring you a couple of laughs. And joining me for said laughs this week, please welcome back Jack DeFranco.
Hola, everybody.
And we are here to run down our favorite stuff of 2020 and a couple of things that we weren't so crazy about. Because if nothing else, we watched a lot of TV and a lot of movies in 2020. And while there may not have been a whole lot of new release movies, I mean, 2020 is the first year since I was a child that I didn't go see a movie in the theater. There was still enough stuff that was released that we want to recognize.
I got three in. Well, technically two in before everything went to hell. So
in hindsight, I wish I had, especially because there were a few movies that came out at the beginning of the year that I just didn't see in theaters. And I don't know why. Had I known, I would have been there. I will say, though,
especially my number one pick, I would have been like, oh, if I knew how good that was, because it was a January release, then I would have been there.
Cool. Yeah. I have to say, though, now that we're in the third week of January in 2021, I have to laugh because there are still four houses on my block that have their Christmas lights up. And like I said 2 weeks ago, that normally, like with people putting up decorations on November 1st, most times I would say, oh, it's overkill, just knock it off already. But yeah, same with this year, I'm okay with it.
Yeah.
This year, I'm like, you know what? If I'm fine with seeing the decorations. Totally. I'll take the holiday cheer for as long as I can get it. I'm in.
Yeah. Typically, I'm like a Grinch because it was like in October, Christmas decorations would come out of the store. It's like, it's too early now. It's like, just have fun. Like,
yeah, enjoy it.
None of that stuff matters anymore. So,
no.
You want to decorate in July? Go ahead. Decorate in July.
Whatever gives you happiness. Well, I was even thinking that. Just if somebody left these decorations up all year, I don't know that I have a problem with it. It's nice to see.
Yeah. Do you.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, do you. As long as it's not harming anybody, who cares?
Or has it been a killing and no one's checked on the household?
Yeah.
Like, man, those decorations are still up.
Yeah, how is it? Alive? It's April. Why is it the Christmas decorations are still up? Like, I guess Santa's still inflated on the lawn every day, so I guess they're okay. But maybe a timer is set. Someone should check on the neighbors. Could be a cause for concern, actually. I'm kind of waking up to this now. Maybe. We'll have to see what's doing on our block. But same with snow, honestly. We did get snow once. It was after
December.
Yeah, right at the tail end, right before New Year's. And I've frankly been hoping for more snow, which even that doesn't happen. I'm always, and this was one of my main things for staying in California. I was like, I don't want to deal with winter anymore. I don't want to deal with the cold weather. Nobody likes it cold all the time. Nobody likes living in the cold. I mean, some people do, but they're weirdos. But overall, I'd rather be in the California sunshine. And I'm laughing as I'm getting like memories from Instagram or Facebook or whatever from previous years when I posted like, well, everybody, it's 72 here in Southern California. Sorry, it's 22 in New Jersey. I'm happy to not be there right now. A lot of those posts from my first couple of winters
it's
in California.
Weird. It's weird because, like, the last apartment my wife and I lived in, the years we were there, like, the day we moved in, there was a snowstorm. And, like, subsequently, there was, whenever it was winter, it was, like, brutal winters there. We moved to our new place, but nothing.
Yeah.
So it's kind of been like, oh, shit, I kind of wanted, like, snow for some weird reasons. Like, there's a big field bias. It's like, it looks so pretty. Now it's like, there's just nothing. So I'm kind of looking forward to it myself, too.
Well, especially this year, too, when there's really nowhere to be and stuff isn't open.
Yeah.
And you're not spending a lot of time outside because the weather's cold anyway. I'm all for it. There's supposed to be snow this week on Wednesday, Thursday, and I hope it happens. I'll be honest. I'm looking forward to snow this year. I don't even mind the cold weather, frankly. I've found it refreshing the handful of times I've gone outside in the short walk from the door to my car when I'm going to the grocery store or something. So
yeah, it hasn't been that bad. So I'm cool. I'm going to hate it in like April or May where it's like, you just fucking go away already. But like,
yeah,
for now, I'll take it.
We're going to get over it really quickly.
Oh, yeah. But by like late March, by Easter, I'm like, just out of here. I want spring.
Totally. So. But for whatever reason, rather, this year, I was up for it. And I just kind of find that to be an anomaly. But you know what? It's fine. I wouldn't mind getting snowed in because, hey, at least now you can be productive. We got Zoom. We can do shows from home and everything. Mm-hmm. So it doesn't. Productivity is not stalled at all now because.
Absolutely.
Now we have technology at our disposal.
Days of the snow day are over. Our the new generation is not going to have snow days anymore.
Yeah. You fools are going to have to do online learning.
Yeah. But you know what? That's kind of good because there were times where there were bad snowstorms and I'd be in school till like June 28th and I'd have to go back like September 1st. So like.
I think
I want a longer summer vacation. I think so take it what you can.
My graduation in 2000, I think, was on like June 28th or 29th because we had so many snow days that year. So,
Yeah, I was in middle school still, and there was I remember that year. That was like,
do you? Yeah, there was a lot. We had like an extra. It was probably legitimately like 5 to 7 days that were snow days. It was one of those years that was just really bad. So our graduation kept getting pushed, which is annoying when you're a senior because you're just thinking, I just want to get the fuck out of here. And
yeah,
it took a while. So on the opposite of going out, well, maybe a little bit of going out on Jack's part, but staying home, let's talk a bit about movies because we have had some new movies that have dropped this year and start at the beginning of the year with one of my favorites, which I'm kicking myself. There are actually two in February that I liked a lot, and I didn't see either one of them. I rented both of them. Didn't see either one of them in theater. Wish I had. The first one's The Gentlemen, a Guy Ritchie film. I like his films anyway. I didn't see the King Arthur movie, and I don't like the Sherlock Holmes movies he did.
Aladdin. Ugh.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Probably his worst film. Oof, atrocious.
Yeah, I'm not up for that, but the British gangster stuff. I mean, I hate to pigeonhole somebody like that in the same way. You remember when The Departed came out? People were saying it's a return to form for Martin Scorsese because he's doing a movie about crime. Yes. As opposed to, you know, doing things like Gangs of New York or The Aviator, you know, and stretching out and doing something different. As much as people did like those movies and they were, you know, regarded well by critics, and I think they're nominated for a bunch of Oscars. But it's one of those things where I hate to pigeonhole people like that, but I just really like his style for that type of movie. And it was cool to see him do it, especially because there was more of an international flavor with this one, with Matthew McConaughey and Henry Goulding and, you know, some of the cast. I thought this is really, really cool. Yeah. And it was funny. There's one scene in particular that I love, which someone right after it came on DVD, somebody put it up on YouTube, which is there's a chase scene when they're trying to get phones from some kids who recorded something that happens. I don't want to get into spoilers. I think it's on Showtime right now, but I definitely recommend it. If you haven't seen it, rent it or check it out on Showtime. But man, that scene, because the music is perfect. It's a group, some unique arrangement and cover version of Shimmy Shimmy Ya by ODB. And it's just such a funny scene. The music is perfect. And the way the scene plays out is so goddamn funny. I can't even tell you. So I had that saved in my YouTube liked videos forever. And then I actually bought it on Black Friday. It was, well, I guess my fourth or fifth 4K release that I got, because it was actually shot in 4K. So I said, oh, okay, good. There's no up converting. This is how it was meant to be seen. So when I get a 4K player in TV, I'll be right there.
Enjoy it in its prime, yeah.
Yeah, I can see every pore on Matthew McConaughey's face.
Yeah. That, honestly, that's going to go into mine, because that's my favorite movie of the year. The Gentleman was just so, just a breath of fresh air. Like I watched it with my wife. She watched it with her brother because he was home from his fellowship. And she said, you have to watch it. I'm like, I'll watch
it. Is he a hobbit?
No.
Noel's brother? What do you mean home from his fellowship?
His medical fellowship or something.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
That's different.
Externship. It's a ship of some sort. So
gotcha. He was on a ship that's all I know. And when he got back, he wanted to watch The Gentleman.
Yeah. But anyway, I watched it and it's so unbelievably funny. What a perfect cast. What a perfect story. Like you were saying, like, you don't want to pigeonhole somebody, but Guy Ritchie does his best work when it's something like that.
Totally.
I mean, Snatch is such a great film, and it makes me want to watch more of those movies. I've never seen Lock, Stock, and Two Smoking Barrels, and a couple other ones.
Oh, we got to watch that.
But, oh my God, I had such a fun time where I almost wanted to just watch it right away. I love it. It's my favorite movie of the year, 2020.
So. Awesome. I feel like that was rushed on DVD because theaters suddenly closed. I feel like it came out kind of quickly.
Late January when it came out. So it's probably still playing somewhere.
Yeah, so I think we rented it in like April. And at that point, like, there was still kind of novel, like, hey, here's a recent movie and we're going to rent it and check it out. And that was a good one. And the other one, which we missed inexplicably and didn't go see, which I was surprised I liked as much as I did, was the Sonic the Hedgehog movie. I got to say, I really enjoyed that movie.
I've heard nothing but good things about it.
I was surprised because, listen, video game movies have a well-earned reputation for being lousy. That not a lot of good adaptations in converting a video game story into a theatrical film. But I had fun because it's also a movie that doesn't take itself too seriously. And frankly, had they made this movie, if the technology had been there 22 years ago, you would have wanted Jim Carrey to be Dr. Robotnik in 1998.
That movie, look at the poster, like, that screams the 90s for me. That's like Jim Carrey and Sonic the Hedgehog.
Absolutely.
It's like, so 1995, it's unbelievable. Like,
and he was perfect. He was everything I was hoping for in that role. And yeah. I'm glad that they approved a sequel, because like every movie now, there's a mid-credit or post-credit scene. I forget exactly. Well, there's two, actually. Now that I think about it, there's two separate scenes. So they did set something up, and I'm glad it was successful enough that they're going to do another one, because I just had fun with the characters. I thought there was an unreasonable amount of a dislike for the movie when people talk about it. It's silly, but I'm thinking it's a PG movie. It's something you can watch. Like, adults will watch it for nostalgia, and kids can watch it because it's an animated hedgehog who runs really fast. I mean, of course, it's silly.
I'm sure it's not dick and fart jokes either. I'm sure it's not like, oh my God, this is insufferable. It looks like a fun movie.
I think there is one fart joke, and there are those moments where I think, but that's it.
Yeah, you're going to have that Nickelodeon moment or whatever it is, but it's going to also be like, if it entertains adults, that's kind of a good measure for a kid's movie like that nowadays. So
yeah,
I people can do that. Pixar can do it and so many others, but like, you look at Sonic the Hedgehog movie, you're like, cash grab, who cares? But it's like, oh wow, caught a lot of people by surprise.
Those were the two that I missed in theaters that I wish I had seen. So let's go over to you.
With video game movies, there's one that came out last year that Noelle and I actually watched for the first time when we got HBO Max set up at our house. Her brother's a big Pokemon fan. We watched Detective Pikachu. I gotta say, I loved it.
Really?
And I'm not a big Pokemon fan. I enjoyed the hell out of that movie. And I'm one of those people that's like, all right, enough Ryan Reynolds, we get it. But like, it wasn't so much him that was the best part of it. It was everything else. And, you know, my sister and a bunch of, you know, younger kids are like of that Pokemon generation where they loved it. And I was kind of there for it because, you know, you live vicariously. It's on TV all the time. Kids are playing her friends are and her are playing games in the house. So you kind of know this stuff. So watching was kind of like, oh wow, good for the fan base to get like a movie about this and have a good movie that's, like you said, entertains people that are just older or like wouldn't be interested in this. I had so much fun with that movie. It was awesome. But again, came out last in 2019, but still I saw it for the first time and enjoyed the hell out of it.
Yeah. Well, we have to give credit to or acknowledgement to the movies that came out last year that we saw in 2020, because people caught up on a lot of stuff from previous years.
Oh, God,
yeah. But recent enough that I think it counts. And it's not like we did something like this last year either, where it's like, well, this missed my list last year, so now it's, you know. Like, we haven't done one of these. I used to do it on my blog, if you want to go to chrisballa.com. I did the best and worst of various years in the past. But rather than write a blog that nobody's going to read, I figured it's going to be an episode. It'd be more interesting having a conversation about this stuff than me spending hours writing something, which is otherwise that could go unnoticed, even though I try to be entertaining in the stuff I've written. But I just thought, you know what, the show is the platform for this. Bill and Ted Face the Music is on both our lists because we chatted about it.
It's the most fun movie of the year, without a doubt.
I agree. As far as just straight up fun, I wholeheartedly agree. It's also, you know, we're predisposed to like it because I like the both movies that came before it. You really like Excellent Adventure. But we talked about that extensively in Cape 131. So if you want to hear our thoughts on Bill and Ted Face the Music, we spent a whole episode, most of an episode on that and talking about the passing of Chadwick Boseman and his career. So you can go back and listen to that. But Bill and Ted Face the Music, absolutely on our lists. I do want to call out another one that I missed. Since you were talking about movies that came out recently that you didn't catch, on paper, it's a 2019 movie because it opened on Christmas Day. But Just Mercy, which got a larger release.
I need to watch.
Yeah.
Because you said it, my dad said it too. My dad ended up seeing it and said the almost exact same thing that you said about how just amazing that film was.
It is. It is. And we're living in a time where a story like this can be told, thankfully. But it's also, you can't get more talented people in a movie like this. The fact that it was Michael B. Jordan and Jamie Foxx is tremendous. I mean, two dudes who are at the top of the... I mean, Jamie Foxx just gets better and better, frankly. And Michael B. Jordan is just consistently great in the right movies. I'm sure he did what he could and, you know, Fantastic Four and everything like that. But I'm saying, like, when he's in a movie like this, it was amazing.
He's one of the best actors in the world right now,
It is. You know, he totally is. He totally
is. Awesome.
And I loved that movie. I mean, it's not an easy watch. It's a drama. I got dusty a couple of times. There are moments, especially when, you know, you're of a certain disposition. And right now we're living in a society. And I mean, worldwide, there's prejudice, of course. But in America right now, there's a very vocal minority. And yes, they are very much in the minority when it comes to looking at a movie like Just Mercy as just it doesn't move the needle for them, in as much as they look at it as that story doesn't need to be told. What we should be talking about is a white person in this situation. But thankfully now in this time where people want to hear these stories, especially based on a true story, this movie just hit every single mark, was wildly entertaining. We rented it and then it popped up in February for Black History Month, actually. It popped up as a $3.99 digital purchase from Amazon. So I just bought it. And so I own it. That's one of the few I own digitally and don't own a physical copy of, but all the extras are available digitally. So that's one I probably won't double up on. But then it was available as a free rental for an extended period of time. So that's how a lot of people saw it, which is great. The idea that Warner Brothers put this up on basically all rental platforms as a free 24, 48 hour rental.
All right.
That kind of eliminates a lot of the theatrical slate. I'm sorry. Was there another one that you...
The last movie I saw in theater was Call of the Wild.
Right.
It was, we saw it actually, it was, weirdly enough, it was actually opening night. It was Harrison Ford and he goes in this, it's based on a classic novel.
Mm-hmm.
But it was fun. It was entertaining. It's a good family movie. It's always good to see Harrison Ford do a film that he might be enjoying himself in, or he's just like, oh, whatever. You know, I enjoy it. So good night at the movies.
I thought I was actually working for someone other than the mouse, and the mouse ended up buying the movie because they bought the studio. That's what I imagine talking to Harrison Ford sounds like, unless he's stoned.
There's a couple other movies that I saw. We actually rented on Amazon. Back in the spring, we saw this movie called Honey Boy. It's Shia LaBeouf directing the story about his life.
Mm-hmm.
Really interesting movie. Another movie that's like, is that, I didn't get like a moved emotionally, but it's like, damn, like he kind of put things into context of like, so that's why he's fucked up a little bit.
Yeah.
And a slight difficult watch, is uncomfortable a lot of times because he's essentially playing his father.
Right.
And the relationship that he's displaying. And it really does show that side of like, you don't always have it all when you think that you're the biggest. And it's, this took place at a time that wasn't like when he was at his peak with like the Transformers films or Indiana Jones. Or
yeah, it's when he was like a Disney kid, right? Or doing...
But, like the Even Stevens show, yeah.
Right.
So this is taking place and like the moments, I'm sure, are that were very uncomfortable were true to life. And you think like, wow, that really could traumatize a kid to kind of shape who he is. And it's kind of that story of like the sins of the father kind of mold the kid, and it's here's where we are because of what happened. I mean, you have to take some accountability and responsibility, but if this is all you know, and with the environment that the kid is living in, it, you kind of look at that and you kind of empathize. You're like, oh, this is, I get it. Like, you feel bad for the guy. He isn't just like some, well, he, you know, he's just a Hollywood hotshot and he fucked up because he's mouthed off to Steven Spielberg or whoever derailed his career. It's like, no, he's had a bad upbringing. Like, and it shows what that can do to a person.
And he's insanely talented. That's the trouble, is so good when he's in something. Like, I remember thinking like, really, Shia LaBeouf's in Fury? And I went and saw it and he's amazing in Fury. And I thought, God damn, this guy has it.
Excellent in that movie.
Yeah. And it's one of those things where you forget, even though you know who he is, but he's so good in the role that you forget you're watching an actor. And that's a great movie too. That's kind of an underappreciated movie from a couple of years ago, from 2014, I believe. But yeah, it's one of those things where I thought, I haven't seen Shia LaBeouf in something probably since the second Transformers movie, because I quit on the third after about 4 minutes. But watching him, I thought, man, this guy is so talented. And just with everything that happens and continues to happen, even recently with getting dropped from Olivia Wilde's second movie, I just thought, man, that's a guy I hope gets it together, because he is not strictly because of his talent. I mean, I genuinely love a comeback story anyway. But he really is. And I just hope his demons and everything else that's clearly hindering him, I hope he gets those under control and bounces back in a huge way, because he's way talented.
Even as a director, like he's got, like he directed the film. The film's shot beautifully. It's directed beautifully. It's a great story. I don't know why we watched did a double feature of that and Marriage Story the same day. So it was kind of like,
oh my God,
I think this
were you, were you feeling too good and you needed to feel worse about yourself?
Yeah, so
you're like, we need heavy drama right now.
Kylo Ren's not doing it for me right now. I need him to get more angry. So,
That's a movie I still do need to watch that I've wanted to see.
And one of my favorite movies this year that we watched, it's one of the funniest movies that we've seen all year. It's called Freaky. It's a movie with Vince Vaughn and Catherine Newton. And essentially it's Freaky Friday, but with a serial killer. He's a serial killer going around town, and he gets this, I don't want to spoil too much, but he has this magical kind of dagger he gets from a victim. And she ends up being like the next victim. And what happens when he stabs her, their bodies swap. So it's like a fun, like Freaky Friday situation of like, now she's this, the serial killer's in her body and she's going around the school like, oh my God, she's the victim, but she's like this stone faced killer that nobody knows. And then he's the actual killer and she's in his body. It's so much fun. It was a Blumhouse movie,
right?
But it's absolutely gory. It has its moments of like, holy shit, this happens. But it's not like a teen comedy. It's a dark kind of horror movie. It's really good. A dark comedy, not a dark horror movie.
Right.
It's really, really funny and worth your time.
That's one of those movies we wanted to see. And it's one of those, see, you've been really good about, you and Noel have rented a lot of these, you know, cinema at home movies that have just been released and premium VOD.
That whole thing sucked.
Which is funny. That goes against the grain. That's one a lot of people liked, I guess, because it was more suggested.
We watched that, we're like, ooh. But like I said in the previous show, like I would have wasted $20 anyway on it and walked out like, that sucked.
Yeah. Mm. But, well, that's it. And that's where I hesitated with
the diner. So
that's where I hesitated with Freaky, where I said, I will watch this movie. It looks entertaining. I'm not going to pay $20 for it. And so it is one we're going to watch. But it was just one of those where I said,
definitely watch.
Are we going to rent this for $20? I mean, Sherry really wanted to. And I just kind of shot that down. I was like, no.
One last non-recommendation that was.
These I don't recommend, everybody.
This movie called Antebellum. It was supposed to come out, I believe, in the spring. It was Janelle Monáe, and it has to do, like, we thought it was another Jordan Peele kind of mindfuck masterpiece.
Mm-hmm.
Like
cerebral horror movie.
Yeah, but it's really not a horror movie. It's more of a thriller, and it just was very underwhelming. I don't want to go into too many spoilers if people want to see it, but essentially it's not, like, if you see the trailer, you think it's like a time travel kind of thing that has to do with slavery and then the modern day and how things happen, and it's really not. It's the trailer kind of messes with you a little bit. It's not really cerebral horror. It's just a thriller with, it's a commentary on modern times, like you were talking about before, but like the Small Majority. It kind of deals with that situation, but
it misled you into thinking it was something
very
it wasn't.
Misled, because it looks like a straight, because it's like from executive producer Jordan Peele. You're thinking, oh shit, here we go.
Yeah,
another fucking like trip, like Us. And
yeah, there's gonna be another head trip where you're like, whoa.
And he didn't even direct it. He was a producer on it. Yeah. So it was kind of like, that sucked.
He's become like Tyler Perry, and before that it was probably like Quentin Tarantino, where like you put their name on everything to help sell it. Where it's like, from producer Tyler Perry, and it used to be like, from Quentin Tarantino. You know, there are a lot of particularly foreign films that I guess Quentin Tarantino would get like an executive producer credit on because he helped bring it to, you know, an American distributor. And there are a couple of people that you look at, and he's that the current incarnation of that marketing tool by putting someone's name on. It's like, from Jordan Peele.
That misleading kinda. Marketing, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Well, there's a few that were direct to DVD that I want to call out. There were two DC animated movies that one I loved and another one that I just really, really enjoyed. And they're both available on HBO Max now as of January 1st, which is so funny. We were talking about on the show the other week about, oh, you know, the Dark Knight movies aren't available on HBO Max and it's one of the big franchises, blah, blah, blah. Now they are. As of January, they are. But they weren't. And I didn't know they were prior to the show. But you can actually now watch those. But you can't watch the 90s Batman movies, those four movies. Between Michael Keaton and George Clooney. I know. Well, you own them anyway.
If I was to pay for the subscription, I'd cancel it. So.
you have those on enough formats that you're covered. But
yeah.
I really loved, and it came out in February, so we rented it like the first week of lockdown, where it was like, hey, we can watch a new movie, kind of. And we're home. We don't have anywhere to be for 2 weeks, even though we knew it was going to be longer than 2 weeks. Superman Red Sun, which is basically...
Just put that in my queue.
Dude, it's really, really good because it's kind of a what-if story where what if instead of landing in Kansas, Superman landed in Russia, in Soviet Russia, and he was fighting for Russian ideals or for Soviet ideals. And it's a really interesting take as far as how that affects the other superheroes in the Justice League who would still be around elsewhere and how he interacts with them and how they view him as being the enemy, because obviously... I believe it takes place in the 80s. Now I can't quite recall. But the idea of, you know, when there was tensions between the U.S. and at the time, Soviet Union, it was, how would we react to an enemy threat like this? They have this indestructible alien. How would the Justice League handle this if they're not part of, you know, if Superman isn't part of the Justice League? And it was really interesting. There's obviously a lot of commentary when it comes to U.S. and Russia relations in recent times, but it was just a lot of fun and exploring. I thought it was interesting because I don't find Superman too interesting as a character in general. Just like he's indestructible except for this green rock, which eventually... What's that?
There's not much you can really do with him other than he's Superman and he can...
He can do anything. Unless he has this green...
The green rock.
Yeah, the green rock that comes eventually in different colors. Apparently different colors of kryptonite do different things. So that was something they did eventually. So I just never found Superman a particularly interesting character. Not just because his whole disguise is glasses and parting his hair. But anyway, so...
And his rogues gallery sucks compared to like Batman's villains and some other villains in the DC universe. Like I always thought Superman's villains were kind of just like, meh. Like Lex Luthor, like you've never seen Brainiac in anything other than anything animated. Lex Luthor has always been the guy used in film, so I've never found like his rogues gallery to be like that exciting.
Yeah, I can see that. I mean, Lex Luthor is a great villain, especially, I feel like that's something that would translate now, even though I'm not crazy about the DCEU's Jesse Eisenberg incarnation of that character, even though the idea is there where it's like a rich billionaire who's super smart and looks at Superman as being an enemy and all that. I think the idea is good, and I feel like that applies now more so because we live in that era of the Elon Musk, the Mark Zuckerberg, you know, the Steve Jobs even, where it's this really intelligent person who builds technology that everybody becomes very dependent on. And how would that person treat an enemy in a comic book era? But obviously, Lex Luthor was thought of way before this brand of tech genius came along, because we've had those in recent times. But yeah, Superman Red Sun, great watch, really entertaining. And I won't get into more details. Does everybody watch it? It's on HBO Max. Also on HBO Max, Justice League Dark Apocalypse War. This is the Justice League or the DC version of Endgame, essentially, as far as the DC animated movies go. If you've watched the other DC animated movies, which I've seen most of them, because that's the thing about the DC animated movies. If you listen to the Wonder Woman 1984 show from last week, you'll know I'm not a fan of the live action ones. But the frustrating thing when I look at Superman Red Sun and Justice League Apocalypse War, it's something that frustrates me because they can make a great animated movie and a story that stands on its own, but can also expand out into other movies, which is kind of this Apocalypse War film is the culmination of the last few movies that they've done. The movies they've done, I should say, over the last couple of years. If you watch them chronologically, there's not overlap or constant nods to the other movies. But if you've seen them, Apocalypse War pays off in that way where you know what's going on with each individual character. Having said that, you know Green Lantern and Superman and Wonder Woman and Batman and you know all that stuff. So if you haven't seen those, you will still get this movie. But
okay,
it's very, very entertaining. I kind of don't want to get into a whole lot of detail in that, but the best I can do is compare it to like their Infinity War and Endgame, where it's the culmination of all these Justice League characters converging in a story where they need to figure their way out. They need to figure out basically how to destroy an indestructible enemy. So
that's great.
That's one that I had a lot of fun.
Is there specific movies that people can find on HBO Max? Like they can kind of, because for me, I'm intrigued by it regardless by itself, but like now that there's like other films might link up to it, this animated verse, like universe, like I need to kind of see them because I want to get the whole experience now. So is there like any way, like any kind of list, or do you know these movies offhand where people can check them out?
There are. I'm pulling it up right now. So the last few years, they've had a bunch of them. I'm going to rattle off a few because a lot of them are on HBO Max. So if you have HBO Max and you want to check it out, I'm going to give you, Jack, and everybody who's listening, the ones that I thought were among the best. I love the first one that I saw that I really loved was actually Batman Under the Red Hood, which I believe we watched with you at some point.
I love that one.
Yeah,
I've seen that twice. Yeah.
Yeah, that's a great one. It doesn't play directly into this, but it is really, really good just as a standalone. And they actually did, I haven't seen it yet. It is on HBO Max as well. But they did a kind of choose your own ending version of that, an expanded version of Under the Red Hood, a movie called Batman Death in the Family. Now, if you have the Blu-ray, you can select what you want to happen to characters as it goes, and it will continue the story like one of those choose your own adventure books. I don't know how that goes on the version on HBO Max, because I know if you rent it digitally, it's a straight up story with no options to choose where the story goes. I know it's just a straight up narrative that's like 70 minutes or something. I don't know if that's how it plays on HBO Max. And that is one that I wanted to see because I thought Under the Red Hood was awesome. But
it felt like the animated series.
I don't know. Yeah. Yeah. That's a really, really good one. Even though it doesn't play directly into this, highly recommend that. Justice League Crisis on Two Earths is fun too, because it's kind of the multiverse, you know, different universes kind of story. Justice League, the Flashpoint Paradox, can't recommend highly enough. And in part, that's kind of what they're pursuing with this Flash movie that's coming up supposedly next year. Is they're going to do this
that
whole one.
That was very good.
This whole multiverse thing
years ago. So I'm going to have to refresh my memory with that, but good story.
Yeah, there were really, a few, really there were a few of those DC movies on Hulu actually for a while. And I guess now that HBO Max exists, they're not there anymore.
Yeah. Back in the day, it was Netflix, like in like 2012, 13. I watched a bunch of them at Andrew's old apartment.
Totally. Yeah. Oh, I saw a bunch of those. Yeah. On Netflix. Cause that was the stuff that was on Netflix once upon a time. That's where I saw Under the Red Hood and Crisis on Two Earths and, Batman, Superman, Public Enemies, and a bunch of these movies. Justice League Doom was on there. And yeah, Superman versus the Elite. I only know these because I'm looking at the list. I wouldn't necessarily remember it. But there are two Suicide Squad animated movies, which are far. I haven't seen the live action version, but they're definitely better than the live action one from what I've been told.
I've seen the live action version. I haven't seen the animated, but I'm pretty sure I agree.
There's Batman Assault on Arkham, and then there's Suicide Squad Hell to Pay. And Hell to Pay is actually really violent. It earns its R rating. It's very bloody. It's really violent. It's not, I don't remember a whole lot of cursing in it, but that is a really good one. Now, Suicide Squad, I don't think really plays into Justice League Apocalypse War, unless I'm just not remembering any of the characters. But there's Justice League versus Justice League versus Teen Titans. There's a Teen Titans solo movie, which is Teen Titans The Judas Contract, which is really good and also has a Deathstroke in it. There was The Death of Superman and Reign of the Superman, which I recommend to everybody because those were amazing. That was one of my favorite movies of 2019, honestly. We saw them separately, and they actually merged them into one movie, The Death and Return of Superman, eventually on Blu-ray, and that's available. I think you can only buy it digitally. I don't think you can rent the movie, but you can watch part one and part two, which is Death of Superman and Reign of the Superman. That plays directly into Justice League Apocalypse War because they do refer to the events of what happened in those two movies in this timeline where Apocalypse War ends up happening. Both cool. Wonder Woman animated movies were really good. There's one called Wonder Woman and then Wonder Woman Bloodlines, which I recommended over watching Wonder Woman 1984. There's Batman Hush, which I really, really enjoyed. That was another 2019 release. And Justice League versus the Fatal Five is fun because it also incorporates more of the Green Lanterns, which we haven't seen much of. Beyond the Ryan Reynolds movie, that obviously we can kind of forget about. But the idea that they introduced Jessica Cruz as a Green Lantern, being a female and a Latina, they pursue that story as far as her taking over the mantle as like the Green Lantern. That is a really good standalone movie, too, which doesn't necessarily play directly into Apocalypse War, but another one I highly recommend. So definitely watch, if nothing else, if you're going to watch Apocalypse War before that, watch Wonder Woman Bloodlines and The Death of Superman and The Reign of the Superman. Those are the movies that I'm going to say definitely watch before those because they're excellent on their own, but they do play into the Apocalypse War story. And the Justice League versus Teen Titans, The Judas Contract are really good too. And the Teen Titans show up in Apocalypse War. So those movies do help. And this isn't like the Teen Titans Go or this isn't like the Teen Titans animated series. These are more the style of the adult animation that is the DC anime movies. Oh, and Apocalypse War is also rated R. And very deserving of rated R. It's really violent. Ooh,
okay.
So those two, if you got HBO Max, make use of that. And if you're a DC fan and you like the live action movies, you probably would have watched these anyway. But if you're like me and Jack and you're frustrated by a lot of the DC live action movies, then the animated movies are great. And when you look at what they can do with those, I don't understand why they can't translate that into a live action movie and make it just a standalone movie or create an arc that works as well as what they've done with the DC animated movies. I don't understand. Yeah. I'm going to call out something. All right. Wonder Woman 84 obviously is on my list of worst movies of 2020. It is. And we devoted all of last week to that. So I'm not going to repeat that again. But I have two other worst before I get to the remaining best. And this was actually released in the US I guess it was kind of a limited release. I don't think it's a big wide release earlier in the year. Downhill, which is with Will Ferrell and Julia Louis-Dreyfus. And it's the American remake of a movie called Force Majeure. And it's inferior in every single way. Having seen Downhill and then watching Force Majeure, because I want to watch the original first, but Sherry wanted to watch Downhill. So we watched the American version first.
I can't believe that happened. I can't believe Sherry twisted your arm enough to be like Will Ferrell. It would be like,
Well, I wanted to see the movie anyway. I thought it was interesting, and I'd heard enough about Force Majeure that I wanted to see that anyway, and that's been on Hulu forever. And I just thought, okay, I totally want to check this thing out. And then when we finally watched Downhill, because I was like, well, it's a recent movie, and it was also a conscious effort knowing we were doing this show. Honestly, it was something that I wanted to do because I thought I want to be up to date, basically. I want to make sure that I've seen most of the movies I want to see that came out in 2020. And Downhill was one of those movies that came out in like February, March-ish. I don't recommend it. Like I said, it's inferior in every way to the original French version. I know it's European. I don't know exactly what country released it, but the original European version is better in every single way. And as if Downhill wasn't enough of a struggle, the ending frustrated us beyond belief because I think it's supposed to make a statement, like literally the last 10 seconds of the movie. I think it's supposed to be making a statement, really saying something. But for us, we were just frustrated by it. So I do not recommend Downhill. And it's voted very low by users on Amazon and everything else, because it's one we kept putting off because we kept seeing the average review after hundreds or maybe even thousands of reviews is 2 stars. And my initial thought was, wow, this movie's really bad. But then I also thought, well, people see Will Ferrell and they assume it's going to be him running around naked and screaming a lot, because that's what you get in Will Ferrell movies most of the time. And it's not that at all. He's the complete opposite. He's actually kind of a passive-aggressive, checked-out dad in this movie. He's not the typical Will Ferrell, and that's one of the reasons it appealed to me.
Is this a comedy, or is this like supposed to be a drama?
It tries to be a comedy, and it just doesn't pull it off. Tonally, it's all over the place. It tries to be a serious drama about a family that's gone through something, but there are also characters that are like right out of SNL sketches, where they belong in a different movie, if I'm being honest. Yeah. So I feel like tonally it was kind of all over the place. And it's short. It's like 90 minutes, maybe just under 88 minutes, something like that. But we were just I didn't enjoy anything about it, just being honest. And having watched the original version and seeing how much better that was, I can't recommend Downhill to anybody. And it looks like people aren't too into it anyway. But that was one I watched recently because I said, I want to see this because it was a 2020 movie. I want to have an opinion on it. And there we are, just disappointing in every way.
Yeah.
We tried giving The Wrong Missy a shot. I like David Spade. I think he's really funny. The woman who's in this movie with him. What's that?
He used to be, at least.
Well, he is. He's really funny on Instagram. I thought his show, was it After Dark? Oh, Lights Out with David Spade. I'm sorry. I completely spaced on that. But I thought Lights Out with David Spade was a funny show. I think he's funny in just his books are great. His audiobooks, you know, I've listened to. And those are a lot of fun. I think he's a funny dude. And even though he plays kind of a pretentious prick and everything, I think he's actually an overall kind of humble guy who recognizes his position in show business. I honestly think that's kind of where he's at, is that he knows.
Fair enough.
He knows his link in the food chain, in the show business food chain. I think he acknowledges that. I think he embraces it. And that's cool. There's actually a really good interview I think The Hollywood Reporter did with him regarding his Netflix show, because Netflix snapped him up after Comedy Central dropped After Dark. Lights Out. It's close. But I like David Spade. And I said, you know what? This could be good. He's always on Howard, and he's always really funny on there, too. So I said, well, let's check this movie out. And Lauren Lapkus, who plays Missy in the movie, The Wrong Missy, was really funny in the Between Two Ferns movie, which I really enjoyed. And I said, well, she's in it. She's funny. This could be kind of good. Now, I'm not going to say we were wrong by watching the trailer first, but it's one of those movies where you watch the trailer and you think, I know exactly what's going to happen. It's going to be, oh, no, he texted the wrong girl named Missy in his phone, and she showed up to go away on this work vacation, work retreat kind of thing with him. And by the end, you know, they're going to be together. And as frustrating as she's going to be, he's going to end up falling for her or finding the attractiveness in it in some way. We quit on this movie 20 minutes in. Aside from the fact that it wasn't funny. Nick Swardson didn't help. He doesn't help anything as far as I'm concerned. I didn't even know he was in it, but he was not the problem with the movie.
I think he was briefly in it because I've forgotten most of Hubie Halloween.
I'm sure he was.
I think he's in it for more than like a minute or two because it's kind of like, okay, yeah. maybe they like realize that he's like the box, the poison. To this, like,
well, he's in every really bad. Look, he's a friend of Adam Sandler, and I respect the fact that Adam Sandler wants to give his friends work. I really do, actually. Just the way he goes about it is great. I'm just not into the movies that he makes or produces, or that the Happy Madison production company makes, like The Wrong Missy. Where we checked out was, aside from the fact that she was obnoxiously annoying, this Missy character, to the point where I said, how that I would never get over this. I would be so over this chick, and I could not be so passive as to just go along with it when she's this outwardly annoying, like clearly annoying.
Yeah.
At the point when they're on the plane, and I'll give it away. I don't think it's not a big spoiler or anything, because again, I didn't see the movie. But the point where we quit was, they're on the plane heading to this work thing that he's invited a hot Missy, who's he's much more interested in, to, and he ends up going with this nightmare Missy. He falls asleep on the plane, and then he's woken up by the fact that under the tiny little airplane blanket that they give you, she's giving him a hand job. And he wakes up to her smiling at him like a psychopath, giving him a hand job. And at that point, I literally just said, well, I'm out. I can't. This isn't funny. This is just going for stupid. And thankfully, she was ready to give up at that point, too. So we bailed on that movie. Didn't like it at all.
Saw the trailer. Like, no, well, we're not watching that.
Yeah. No, don't watch it. No, I think it's terrible. But look, if you like that brand of movie, if you like the stuff Happy Madison does and the stuff Adam Sandler puts his name on.
I like the Goldbergs. That's the only thing they do that I can say I really love. They're a production company behind that show, but that's it.
Yeah, so. It didn't do anything for me. But those are the three that I definitely don't recommend. Downhill, Wonder Woman 84, and The Wrong Missy. Those are my big three for worst. Straight to streaming movies included with your subscriptions. The first one, Borat subsequent movie film.
Yes.
I did not like the original, the first Borat movie. And the reason I didn't is because people treated that like it was the invention of comedy. They really did. They were like, this is the funniest movie ever made. It was so overhyped that by the time I watched it, I just kind of dismissed it as like, oh, it's like Jackass, where it's like, it's these crazy pranks and these people doing these crazy things.
I never even saw it. It was just so overdone at that point. Like, I'm so sick of this character and I've never even seen the movie. So,
exactly.
Like, everybody in 06 was always like, very nice.
Exactly. Yeah. And that was the other thing.
I'm
I was like,
done. Like, I don't even need this.
It was that year's Napoleon Dynamite, where it's everybody going around quoting and referring to the movie.
Fucking watch.
But the thing I like most about the original Borat, it was when it came on DVD, it had a slipcase on it like a lot of them do. But the DVD box art itself looked like a cheap international bootleg. So I love that the design looked like a pirated DVD of a movie. I thought that was hysterical. But the movie itself, it just didn't resonate with me, but I think it was really oversold. Having said that, I thought the sequel looked way funnier than the original one had ever looked to me. We jumped on it right away as soon as it came out because the timeliness of it. I mean, obviously him showing up at the CPAC convention and confronting Mike Pence dressed up like 45. And carrying a woman over his arm and all the stunts with his daughter God. And everything. It was hysterical. I immediately recommended it to everybody. Jack
we
and his wife.
Pause most of the movie. It was a 2.5 hour adventure because I was just like,
we watched it the day before Halloween. We hung out with Jack and his wife, Noelle. We said, you got to watch this movie. We had to pause it 4 or 5 times because you were laughing so hard. You were laughing hysterically. Noelle was just in shock. She was just open mouth.
Yeah, she gets
shocked.
That whole like, oh my, like she's laughing.
Mm-hmm.
She's not like expressing me. I'm just like, ah.
Oh man, because there are so many moments that are cringeworthy, but in a funny way, in an awkward kind of cringy way. There were a few moments that Sherry covered her face with the blanket, just was going, ah, just kind of screaming, because I have to imagine that if you were remotely interested in this movie, you would have seen it by now. But if you haven't, oh my God, please watch it. Even if you didn't like the first movie. And if you see the silliness of the pandemic and everything, and the fact that this movie was made during the pandemic, so it's very current. That was the thing that I feel like it really helped to encapsulate this moment that we're in with the binary with us or against us nature of what's going on politically with the pandemic, with a lot of this, a whole lot of what's going on right now in the year that was 2020. It was perfect for that, for really encapsulating this moment. And it's one of those things where I feel like in the future, for years and years, in decades, they will look at it and say, oh, yeah, that kind of represents a lot of what it was like and the ridiculousness of where we were in 2020 as a nation. I got to be honest.
Perfect. Yeah,
and that was perfect. One they wanted to hold off. Actually, there was a great interview with Sacha Baron Cohen that just came out, where Universal originally was doing the sequel and they wanted to hold it back until it could be released in theaters in 2021. And Sacha Baron Cohen, bless him, took a stand and said, like, no, this needs to go out right away. And now, it needs to go out definitely prior to the election to expose. I mean, certainly the Mike Pence thing kind of speaks for itself, and the Rudy Giuliani thing. I mean, geez, days before the movie was released, on Amazon Prime, that was all over the place. And that scene, which I feel like Noelle was blissfully unaware of, she was in legit shock when she saw that Rudy Giuliani scene. Like, wait, is this for real? Yes.
There was rumblings, or like, because I guess the news broke a couple days, or like, because we saw the movie obviously after it came out,
right?
Where it was like the Rudy Giuliani thing, and it's like, what did he do? And you see it, you're like, my face is literally like jaw on the floor. Like,
what is captured on film, you can't interpret it any other way. As much as he tried to frame it like something else was going on, like, you're seeing it.
No human being fucking does that with me too.
Like, yeah, you're not really. You're not taking a microphone off by laying flat on a bed and unbuckling your pants and reaching in into your junk. No way. Mm-hmm. Not a chance.
Microphone's not there, buddy.
And yeah, exactly. Like, you know, microphone sits a little higher on your chest, right? Hilarious. Just absolutely hilarious. Oh, and was a movie, God, when we watched it the first time, we had to pause because we were laughing so much. We paused it probably just as many times ourselves, 4 or 5 times, where it was so outrageous. We were just in hysterics. But I do want to go back and watch the original Borat now. And also, I should say, part of the reason I was also really interested in this movie is because I thought the Showtime series Who Is America that Sacha Baron Cohen did was great in exposing a lot of the silly parts of American culture right now by going into these various characters. And I feel like he doubled down on that with this Borat, because now that Borat's recognizable, Borat needs to dress up as other people. So it's not Sacha Baron Cohen playing a character. He's dressed. He has to dress up like a cow. Borat needs to dress up like a cowboy and introduce himself as, hello, I'm John Chevrolet. You know, like, he needs to pretend he's in disguise because Borat's too recognizable.
Yeah.
And I thought that added an extra layer of ridiculousness to it.
Because some of those people are just like, they don't know who he really is. Like, they don't know, like, did they not?
Totally.
Were they not alive for 14 years before?
Well, it's also, this isn't like an internet character either. Like, Borat was a huge movie, and it was long. It was far enough back.
A film. Like, that's why I didn't see it, because everybody was like, very nice, and all that other stuff, because it was all over the place.
Totally. I don't know how people were unaware of the Borat character all these years later, because I feel like it, even though it wasn't something that, you know, people weren't dressing up as Borat for Halloween beyond like 2008, I don't think, but it's still something I feel like you would have a reference point for. I know you, it wasn't like some YouTube character or something that like people haven't heard of, you know what I mean? Like, this was a big movie, and it was a movie a lot of people saw in the theater, and then a lot more people saw on DVD, where it's just kind of surprising that it's like, really, you don't recognize this? You don't know this is a character?
Yeah.
But at the same time, he's so goddamn good at slipping into these characters that you wouldn't know it wasn't a real person. You wouldn't know it was a guy who was playing a character. So that one's highly recommended. And of course, the last big release aside from Wonder Woman that came out straight to streaming, Pixar's Soul, which I loved in every way. Pixar is the only studio that can pull off taking something that's emotionally heavy and potentially very, very sad and combining it with the levity and humor that you would expect from just a fun family animated film. I feel like they knocked it out of the park with Soul. I feel like there was nothing
better
wasted.
And better with certain, like, their animation keeps getting better and better. The story keeps getting better and better. It's a very, it just felt cool to be in like the real world kind of thing. It's like toys and this, like, it's a real world thing, but you go to this wherever you go and then deal with that and consequences. It was funny. So
it was,
and it wasn't as sad, because I looked at that and thought, man, it's going to be like Toy Story 4 all over again.
Exactly.
And it wasn't. It was just like, I feel good after this movie, and I was invested in the guy, like, oh, I hope he makes it.
I hope this works out. I really hope this works out for everybody. And it was amazing. It was fantastic, to use Jack's favorite adjective. Yeah, not much more we can say. That's another one. Like, you probably would have watched it by now if you were interested in it, because it's been practically a month since it came out, but can't recommend it highly enough. Move over to TV.
There
was a lot of catching up. This, I feel like, was the area where there was a lot of catching up for series. Certainly for me, the two series that didn't have new seasons that I watched in their entirety at the beginning of 2020, or I should say, well, through 2020, I should say, at the beginning of the year when I was sick and I couldn't do anything pre-pandemic, pre-lockdown, all that stuff, the show that I watched straight through because my mother had raved about it and watched the entire series twice through herself was Atypical on Netflix, which is amazing. And it's not too many episodes. The episodes are only a half hour. I think there's 8 and 10 episodes, something like that. I think there's maybe the first two seasons are 10 episodes each, and then the third one's 8 episodes. Really, really good. Great cast. I love Michael Rapaport. I love Jennifer Jason Leigh. The kid who plays the main character, who's autistic, is not really autistic. He is an amazing actor in the way he's able to play this part. And he was in that terrible movie. What the hell was that movie that we watched?
It Follows.
Holy shit. That hipster horror movie that we watched at Jack and Noel's on Halloween, or around Halloween. So terrible. He was in that. And thankfully, he's way better in Atypical. I love the show. It approaches real life in a way that's not heightened. It's kind of slice of life, but it also does explore the reality of having a child who's autistic and how the family deals with it, and that it's not entirely a struggle, but they're also not shying away from the challenges that it can present for family, socially, plus also the parents dealing with a marriage, you know, the way his younger sister deals with everything. It's an excellent show. I recommend that to everybody. Thankfully, they're doing a fourth and final season. I don't know if they've gone back into production yet, but that is a show I watched in like 2 weeks. I watched all three seasons. The last season came out right at the end of 2019, but since I watched all three seasons at the beginning of 2020, I'm recommending that to everybody, because thankfully there's one more season coming end of this year, maybe next year, but it's excellent. I enjoyed it. It's really funny. It has some drama to it, but it's primarily a comedy. So it's worth checking out. Everybody needs to watch that one.
All right, cool. I'll put that on my list.
What do you got, Jack? Oh, we know what your favorite show was, Jack. I'll get it out.
That for later. Yeah.
Oh, you're saving it. Okay.
Yeah. So this past year, being unemployed, you're up late at night and you watch a lot of dumb shit.
Yeah.
So I got back into Family Guy this year. I hadn't watched Family Guy consistently for probably 8 or 9 years, and got back into the last couple seasons, and just all summer long, like 2 episodes a night, just was like my late at night wind down show. And honestly, for years I kind of was like, oh, except McFarlane's not funny anymore, just a bunch of callbacks, a bunch of this. Whatever happened in like the mid, like the 13th or 14th season and onward, I'm fucking dead. Like, there's so many episodes where I've just like cried laughing.
I'm with you. There were, apart from, you know, the random episode here and there that's maybe disappointing or just not as good as the rest, there were about 2 seasons in there that I didn't find funny at all.
Like, and 11 and 12, or whatever, 10, 11 or 12.
That's the thing. See, I remember them in terms of the DVDs, which weren't released as season sets. They released as volumes. So I don't know exactly what seasons there were, but there were 2 seasons that I even rewatched on Hulu. I did this at the beginning of 2019 last year. That was my wind down show. And before I knew it, it's been 2 hours and I watched 6. So I was burning through seasons. I watched like a season in a week. So I was way caught up on Family Guy, and that show continues to be really funny. The Sam Elliott episode that was just on there recently was
I have to catch
hysterical.
Up on the new season, but like,
oh, dude. See, that is a show that you can skip ahead to what's going on now, and there's not really like a season arc like there is with live action. I mean, kind of the same with The Simpsons, which is another show I've enjoyed watching endlessly since the entire series is on Disney Plus, and the current seasons are on Hulu, season 32, I believe. So we're still watching that every week and watching old episodes because it's amazing.
It just never gets old. It gets funnier as you get older. So
it does. Yeah. And I know there are entire seasons of The Simpsons that people say weren't funny either. I haven't really found that, but we're also watching it randomly. We're not watching episodes chronologically. So there might be some episodes in there that aren't as good, but watching them in hindsight is always easier too. Even the same with Family Guy. Like, when you watch 2 hours, when you watch 6 really funny episodes, it's easy to walk away and say, this show is great.
Yeah, absolutely.
So that's what I did too. So I'm with you on that. I think Family Guy's found its footing and has been awesome these last few years.
Yeah, and you're not a fan of this, but the second half of Rick and Morty season 4 came out in spring, and it's one of the best comedies on TV. I'm gonna put it. I love it. Like, it's just so fucking funny. The fan base sucks. Like, most fan bases, they suck. But like, this show, I can't deny how unbelievably funny some of these episodes have been. My favorite episode of the season was the Vat of Acid episode. So for those, I'm not going to go into it at all, but it was amazing. So, and there's only 5 episodes this season because they split it up. It started, the first half was November 2019, and then the last half was like, I think, May of 2020 or April or May of 2020. Aww. So
that sucks when, like, they do that with so few episodes.
Yeah, they do, but they're supposed to do like 7 or 8 more seasons. So I'm cool with if it's like balanced out like that. Like, because honestly, and they said this in the promo of Rick and Morty. He's like, this is all you can really handle this time. It's a joke. It's like, no. I want a full season. And it's kind of like, man, there are five fucking funny ass episodes and I'm good with this. Like, it was like, there's enough in those five half hour episodes. And I'm like, I'm good. I can't wait for it to come back. But damn, that was satisfying enough.
So. Well, and it's comforting to know it's going to go on for a couple of years, even if you're getting a few episodes at a time. I mean, that was our frustration with Futurama because it was always on the verge of getting canceled again.
Oh, God, yeah.
And then it's like, you're getting another 13 episodes. Yay. And then we'll see how that goes. So the idea that if you're getting, let's say, 10 episodes in a calendar year, you know, you're getting it for a couple of seasons still. So knowing it's going to be there till, you know, 2030, there is a comfort.
I'm
in
cool
that.
With it.
And yeah, I just never got it. I tried Rick and Morty, didn't get into it. I lumped that in with Adventure Time for a show I tried and just I didn't get the lure.
I never watched Adventure Time, but I know a couple of our friends were into it. I did watch one, and it didn't make me start the series at all, but there was one late night where early on the pandemic where I was just like, it's 4 a.m. and I'm still not tired. What's up? I watched an episode of Bob's Burgers, and I never liked that show, but there was one episode where I don't know if it was because I was so deliriously tired, but there was one moment where I just cracked up in the middle, like just died laughing in the middle of one episode. So I'll describe the scene because it made me laugh so hard.
Okay.
One of his daughters, like the kids are awkward or something like that. And the dad is like, okay, we're going to teach you how to drive today because we're in this empty parking lot. And there's just literally one car across the parking lot. And they're like, okay, we're going to teach you how to drive. And the daughter's like nervous. Like, I can't just do it. You know, just do this. And just, so she starts driving. And it's like, all right, now Tina, cut your wheel. And she's heading straight for the one car in the parking lot, Tina. And he's like, screw it, Tina. Jesus Christ, you're going to hit the... Like, it's the way it was. She just, like, goes for no reason, just, like, this, like, steadily into the car. And he's yelling, just for God's sake, turn the wheel! Cut the wheel! Put your brakes on! And she just hits it. I died laughing. Just, I don't know what it was.
That moment
got me so good.
The way you're describing it does sound really funny.
Yeah.
And it probably pays off.
Like, Tina, oh my God, you're heading straight. There's the only car. Why are you heading for the only car in the park? Oh my God, cut your wheel, for the love of God. And just, you know, and the whole episode, they have to, like, don't tell your mother you were in an accident. Don't tell this. And it just snowballed. It was like this whole insurance scam. It was pretty funny.
Hey, here's a show that didn't get enough love. Muppets Now.
And it's,
that's fun. It's something I wanted to talk about on another show, but at the same time, it's another one I was shouting from the rooftops, telling everybody I know, you need to watch the show. It's a lot of fun. And nobody, like you, Jack, a lot of people who haven't watched it yet, which sucks because they only did 6 episodes. They're releasing them once a week. I thought they were really funny. I love the variety show format that they did. Which, shut up. I'm praising the Muppets. I'm going to take another half hour to praise them.
But they're under the wrong, house. They got to get out of that. I wish there was a way that they could be released from the mouse house. So.
Well, it's not even that. I just feel like you could bring people in who do kind of know what to do with them. I mean, this show came about because there was a show Josh Gad had an idea for that apparently they dropped out of. So they'd committed to this idea that he had for, I believe it was a show. I don't think it was another movie. I think they were just looking to do a new show for Disney Plus with the Muppets. They dropped out of that and did this format. Now, the thing I like about Muppets Now is the way the Muppet Show was, it was kind of a play, almost a satire, but at the same time, very much in the vein of those primetime variety shows that were big in the 60s and 70s. Yeah. And the show came along at the end of the 70s, where that was a big deal. You had a guest star and you had a bunch of sketches and musical numbers and all this other stuff. And I think that was great because that was of its time. You couldn't do a Muppet Show type show now.
No.
So the format that they took is like various internet series. So it's made up of a bunch of sketches in a similar way, but connected through Scooter needing to upload the segments for the show and then getting on a Zoom equivalent called Rainbow Connector with everybody because people are bugging him about putting the show up and everything. And it's really funny. The Miss Piggy segments, lifestyle with Miss Piggy and the things they do with that are hysterical. Those are among my favorites. You know, there's Swedish Chef doing cook-offs with different celebrity chefs. I thought it was hysterical. It's a shame there were only 6 episodes. And it's one of the things that I'm going to speak on behalf of the Muppet fandom, because I've heard a lot of this in the last few weeks. Well, in the last month, really, since the big Disney announcements for everything, we're getting 79 Star Wars shows and 0 Muppets.
Oh,
so Star Wars is going to get fucked out and Muppets are just going to languish in the Disney archive. Well, come on.
And you know what? No, honestly, that is a travesty because of all the things that they could have announced that day, they couldn't do something with the Muppets. That's why I believe that they're under the wrong house, under the wrong leadership. Clearly, they don't give a shit about the Muppets, and it's a shame.
It is. And, well, Bob Iger apparently didn't know what to do with the Muppets. I think we talked about that previously with Engineer
and
Chris.
And even like Frank Oz is kind of like, I think he's very opposed to the regime with the Muppets, like what's going on now with the Muppets. He's very, like, very angry about it, from what I understand. He's very, like, out there, like, how some people would spin, like, someone's really upset about this. Like, Frank Oz is really upset about what's going on, and rightfully so, because if there's no representation that's doing it justice, it sucks.
Totally. Bring in Frank Oz as a consultant. The guy worked.
Bring in the people who made this work.
Yeah, like, he was a consultant. Or, I'm sorry, work side by side with Jim Henson forever. Bring him in to consult on the directions the Muppets should take. Ideas that should go on. I mean, really, like, why is it not under his... Look, he's not necessarily gonna take the helm of what goes on with the Muppets under Disney, but bring the guy in.
Yeah.
I don't understand. Like, nobody knows better than him. I mean, there's still a few Muppet performers, you know, who are around from the old days, but...
Yes, but I'm sure... Every single one of them would love to work with Frank Oz.
Exactly. Like, he can tell you, like, this is why the Muppets worked in these films, on TV, in all these different iterations. Bring the guy in. Disney's got a couple of bucks to spend. Come on. I mean, again, looking, it's frustrating. And look, I like Star Wars. Obviously, we're getting to The Mandalorian, which we loved, which there's probably not a whole lot of discussion to have about it, except from that finale is in the running for best movie of 2020. that season finale, season two.
There's so many things I have to say about.
Of course you do. That's going to be an hour in itself. No, but it's frustrating when you're looking at a property like that, or same with the Marvel shows, where they got 10 Marvel shows that they're working on. And different variations on their animated catalog. Here you have this property.
Everything's represented, though, and then the Muppets were just kind of like, yeah.
There was nothing. You know, not even a Muppets Now season two. Or we're doing 10 episodes of Muppets Now next time, because they did 6. And I don't know if the pandemic affected that. But, you know, it's just something that, like, you're doing all of this stuff. You're building up all of your IPs. Anything you've acquired.
And that's the only one they've kind of just dropped and ignored. I mean, we're getting Chip and Dale Rescue Rangers. We're getting...
Like, I understand revisiting so stuff from 30 years ago.
Hocus Pocus 2. You couldn't just do a Muppet show? Like, come on.
Yeah. I don't know, dude. I really don't understand. And it's not like they don't have people who they can consult with. Someone like Frank Oz, who would be the perfect person to just have a meeting with. Or have him give some guidance with whatever, you know.
Yeah,
even
make
if he's
him
not
like the Kevin Feige of like the Marvel, or like the Kathleen Kennedy.
Even
or...
if he doesn't want to have something. That big a role, if he doesn't want to work that hard, and I can't blame him. I'm just saying, even if it's just to have the conversation, like, what would you do? What are we missing in what we're doing with the Muppets? Now, I also enjoyed the Muppets ABC series that I thought was really funny, and having rewatched that on Disney Plus, having not seen it since it aired like 5 years previously. I had a lot of fun with that show. I thought the format was fun because it's the Muppets poking fun at that NBC sitcom style of like The Office and Parks and Rec and shows like that, where it's a workplace comedy for one, but it's also everybody's speaking to the camera one-on-one while also running this talk show, which, considering at that point when that show came along, I thought it was extra funny, and it wasn't too inside, but the idea
like
that
30 Rock, but with Muppets.
Exactly. Well, I feel like having 30 Rock as a reference point would make people appreciate, like, working on a show behind the scenes. I've worked on a couple of talk shows specifically behind the scenes, so I had the reference point of, like, wow, this is funny. There's a couple of archetypes they touch on, which were great, and I get why people didn't like that element, because it definitely was more of an adult thing. It was a primetime show, but so was the Muppet Show. The Muppet Show was an adult puppet show.
Yeah,
it was a primetime show.
It was updated for modern times. I thought it was like going to be a slam dunk. Like, oh, wow. It, like, because the Muppet movies that had come out at the time were really good. And maybe Muppets Most Wanted kind of flew under the radar, but I thought it was going to work.
So. I did, too. And I thought, look, I'm glad they didn't just dump Muppets Now and put all 6 episodes up in a day so people could watch it and forget it.
Yeah,
I'm glad that they released one a week. And it was frustrating even as soon as the first episode dropped. Because people are like, oh, Kermit sounds weird. Yeah, it's a new person. It has been a new person for a while now. We get it. And at the same time, it got better. He sounds one way in the first episode, and the rest episode of the episodes, he sounds better. I mean, I realize that everybody's, you know, it's a made up voice. But I think the first episode, maybe it'll bump you. But episodes 2 through 6, it works. And Kermit's also not a mainstay of the show. He keeps popping up in the show, but the show isn't centered around him. either. It's got all these other characters, which is the other thing. They got so many characters. I don't know. I could go on and on. But Muppets Now, if you haven't watched it, like everybody I've friggin' talked to in the last 6 months, watch Muppets Now on Disney Plus. It's a lot of fun.
I have to give that a shot.
It's yeah. family friendly, and it's 6 half-hour episodes. They fly by. They're not even a half hour, like 22 minutes. It flies by. So you can watch the whole thing in 2 hours.
Sister, like, hey, tell my niece to stop watching Frozen 2 90 times. Let's watch, you know.
Well, that's the funny thing. People love the Muppet Babies. Like, kids now love the Muppet Babies animated series that's happening right now on Disney Junior, I think it is, or the Disney Channel, wherever it airs. Yeah, yeah. It's great. It's one of Andrew's daughter's favorite shows. She loves Animal. And I'm thinking, great, your kids like the show. Have them watch the Puppets.
Here's the Puppets.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah, because it wasn't like one or the other as a kid. We had the Muppets and we had the animated series. So like there's Muppets everywhere when we were kids.
Yeah.
So well, that was that it. Age, of Andrew's daughter's age. So
yeah. They were more in the lexicon then. So
yeah, totally.
That's part of the problem is Disney hasn't done enough with them since acquiring them. And it's kind of a drag, but
yeah.
Anyway, you want to move on to your favorite show, Jack, or do you have others you want to call out?
A couple things on Netflix we checked out, and then I'll go into some other stuff I was really, really, really into for the
year. Is it going to be everything you watch, or is it just going to be the best stuff?
I'm just going to go over the best stuff.
Okay, good.
So I don't really watch much regular TV. I'm more, you know, watch wrestling and stuff like that, and YouTube videos. And
right.
So that kind of
same
thing.
Same for me. I got two network shows I want to praise. But
yeah. So I actually ended up watching on Netflix. My wife and I are currently watching Schitt's Creek, and I know the series ended this year, and everybody's like, it's one of the best finales ever. I don't even want to guess what it's going to be about, but we're midway through season, actually at the tail end of season two. So we've enjoyed it. We love it. We watched this show called Away, starring Hilary Swank and Josh Charles.
Yes. People love that show and are pissed they aren't getting, they aren't renewing it.
Freaking absurd why they just canceled it flat out. And it was one of those shows where Noelle's like, will you watch this with me? Because sometimes she has to kind of twist my arm to be like, will you please watch this?
Yeah.
Like, what is it about?
Cause sounds I, about
usually,
right.
Usually, like, Noelle and I have different habits as opposed to married couple. She watches your crappy Bravo shows and her 98 Day Fiance. So anytime she says, we watch this with me, I have to brace myself like, well, what is it? Yeah. If Andy Cohen's in it, it's a fucking flat no. So like, it's a space show. Hiller's saying my wife loves space exploration. So I was like, okay, I'm down. I'll watch it with you. So we watched it within the span of a week. It was really, really good. And honestly, there are ideas. I'm not going to get spoilers, but there are ideas for a second season. So I don't know what the excuse was to cancel it, but it was stupid because they could go somewhere, obviously, with this show. And it really is, honestly, the most realistic interpretation of if there were legitimate space travel to Mars, this is probably what it would be like. And if you're faced with a crisis, because every episode is kind of like a massive crisis, everything kind of hinges on this or you're dead. It's realistic enough. So I can't recommend the show enough, and it's a damn shame. And then everybody who I've ever talked to about this next show, and I watched the first episode and I thought it's really good and I will continue and watch it, but The Queen's Gambit seems to be, every time you say those two words together, you hear it's followed by, it's amazing. Like,
yeah.
No one will just, it just, it's like, okay. Like, no one has like a different, and maybe that's a good thing, but at the same time, it's like, you haven't finished it? No, I've watched the first episode. Noelle jumped ahead and watched a couple more, and I said, just look, with the amount of time it takes me to get through something, just finish it, and I'll come back to it later. So I mean, it's good. Watch the first episode, but like, it seems to be the conversation piece of now, where it's like, the Queen's Gambit? Oh,
well,
my God.
That and Bridgerton, because that came out on Christmas Day. Those are the two Netflix shows everybody's like, it's a show. I don't know. I'm not watching it either.
Yeah. But like, everybody's like, oh, it's the best thing. And the Cobra Kai also. And now look, I can't wait to watch Cobra Kai, but I also want to watch Karate Kid 1, 2, and 3 beforehand. And they keep jumping around from streaming service to streaming service. So
yeah,
they're on IMDb TV right now with ads. I'm like, okay, I guess I'll have to watch them that way because they were on Netflix.
Yeah, because in 2 weeks they'll be somewhere else.
So it's like, I'm trying to avoid spoilers because everybody's going crazy for the third season. And they're like, guess what's happening in the fourth season? It's like, don't fucking tell me what's going to happen in the fourth season. So,
oh, that's the era, Jack. It's the internet era where everyone wants to spoil everything and talk about it in real time as it happens.
Yeah. But I've talked about it on an earlier show. I fell in love with the show The Last Dance about Michael Jordan and the Bulls.
That I need to watch.
Yeah. Oh, my God. It's on Netflix now.
Yeah. It's been sitting on my list for about 2 months.
Like, I have no knowledge, no interest in basketball whatsoever, and even trying to watch basketball after I watched this. It was kind of like, this doesn't, it's still not as good. I mean, obviously it's a pandemic, but it's like, there was nothing like this. And it was kind of like, man, like, even though I grew up in that time, it just was kind of like, oh, I wish I experienced this, because it was such a good story. And I was so enthralled till the end of, like, I didn't know that they, of all the accomplishments and the goals and everything else, it was fascinating. So I got to recommend that. And then I got to throw in a couple of, because I told you I watch wrestling. There's a couple of really great documentaries that I watched this year.
All right, I'm going to mute
available
you.
On WWE Network.
Which nobody has. I'm kidding. None of our listeners have it.
Shut up. Right, you're borrowing it.
We do. Yeah. You got to put it on my Fire Stick, because Sherry's into all that. She's watching everything on D-Generation since you put it on there.
Yeah. The best series, obviously, is Undertaker, The Last Ride. The story of how the last 3 years of his career were documented, where it ends with his retirement. The ending brought me to tears. Another couple on the network I want to recommend, Ruthless Aggression, which was a sequel series to the Monday Night Wars about the era post. What happens when your main competition goes out of business? And it's like, oh yeah, now we're the only company in town. What do we do when we're losing our audience? And also the Mortician, the Paul Bearer story was fascinating. There's one big one that's not on the network that I will address.
No, I know what that's going to be.
Yeah.
That's been playing in our house too.
Yeah, a couple miniseries. There's a miniseries called the 24 series, which follows a particular person or event or whatever. And this one's about Edge. It's called The Second Mountain, where he had come back 9 years after career-ending neck surgery. And then the last one, non-WWE, is the Dark Side of the Ring series, which was interesting. Some parts of it were funny, but some parts of it were unbelievably heartbreaking.
Yeah, there's a lot of tragedy in that show.
Oh, God. Ups and downs, and it made me feel all sorts of things this year. So
I don't think Sherry even watched the Owen Hart episode, because she would have such a hard time with it.
I recommend only seeing it once.
Yeah,
and then
I'll bet.
I can never do it again.
I'll bet she remembers that. She remembers that very, very well. She was a big wrestling viewer at that time in that era. Well, I do want to call out two network shows for being great. Aside from streaming, they're worth catching up on if you have the means to. The Blacklist, of course, which continues to be great. James Spader's amazing. There's not enough good I could say about that show. It's so great. I mean, unfortunately, that's a show that the season was cut short because of COVID. So they did the best they could to kind of cobble together a season finale. But I love that show is constantly going somewhere, constantly uncovering new things, and it doesn't feel forced. Because I don't know if they have a show ending in mind. Because as we've talked about in previous episodes last year, the frustration that a lot of people have that the series finale doesn't pay off. And our experiences with shows that we felt like had a weak sauce ending. And I hope they have an ending in mind. It seems like they do. I don't feel like they're making this up as they go along to pad the series. It doesn't feel contrived in that way. It feels like everything is going somewhere and they know kind of what their end game is. That's honestly how I feel about the show. The other show we really loved, which Sherry and I watched together, is on CBS, Bob Hart's Abishola, Chuck Lorre produced show. I love Two and a Half Men. We rewatched
What's the name of the show?
Bob Hart's Abishola. You've never heard of this show? Well, it's a okay. So it's Billy Gardell, who played Mike and Molly, which we watched. Sherry had seen the episodes in bits and pieces. We watched the whole series of Mike and Molly.
I just didn't know what the words were. Like Bob, like what's the? I thought it was all one word you were saying.
No.
Okay,
Bob Hart's Abishola. Sorry, I'm probably just talking way too fast. Okay. Anyway, we watched Mike and Molly together, which was great because we had to wait until we were done with the last season of Bob Hart's Abishola because Sherry kept saying, like, I just see him as Bob. I said, well, now we're going to see him as Mike because we don't know where we're getting the second season. But now they started the second season, thankfully. That started airing in November. But it's a funny sitcom. If you like Two and a Half Men, if you like Mike and Molly, then it's very much that sense of humor. It starts off, Bob had a heart attack, and he immediately falls for his nurse, who's the first person he sees when he wakes up after his bypass surgery, this Nigerian woman named Abishola. You know, there is the interracial relationship element, which obviously appealed to us for some pretty obvious reasons. But aside from that, it's just a really funny show. It's got a lot of funny characters. It does explore the kind of cultural differences. I mean, it's not something that they're ham-fisted about, where they're just like, remember that she's black and he's white. You know, they don't constantly emphasize it. But they also deal with it in a realistic way, but in a really funny way as well. So that's a show that we've really enjoyed. We're glad it's back. And I think we're actually like maybe two episodes behind, honestly. It's one of those, because there's so few things we watch on broadcast television that the idea of, oh, right, we need to switch our TV to the cable box so we can watch stuff on demand through Fios. Gotcha. Yeah. So we kind of forget because everything pops up on Hulu or, you know, some other app we have a subscription for.
Those series still. Like, I'm glad that, like, certain things, like, are still around, like those little, like, CBS comedies and stuff like that. Like, I was watching, like, a couple weeks ago we had Wheel of Fortune on, and I was like, man, I'm so glad this is still on. Like, it's still, like, a part of, like, the culture kind of thing. Like,
yeah, it would be weird. It'd be weird if it wasn't on anymore.
Even, like, the Goldbergs, like, this is one of my Noel's favorite shows. It's, like, it's so good to have, just, like, even the shows based in the 80s to have, like, a sitcom that's like this still. I love that.
Death to 2020 on Netflix. Watch it. Hysterical. Just what we needed. We watched it on New Year's Eve. I think it came out December 28th or something. It's done with the presentation, I should say, of like a primetime news documentary, like something you would see on CNN or 2020 or something like that, where they're interviewing experts, even though they're played by Leslie Jones actors, and Sam Jackson. Yeah, yeah. And yeah, actors. And the way they look at a lot of 2020 in, and everybody, it's not completely, it's not totally slanted. Everybody's going to look at it and be like, well, of course they're going to hate the president and blah, blah, blah. There's enough picking on Joe Biden's age. I promise you, there's a whole lot of insulting of many sides on this show, and it's just over an hour. Really, really funny. Highly recommend that. Another show we watched, which we tried to stretch out during the year because we don't know when we're getting season four, which is a show Sherry tried and got about three episodes in and wasn't into and quit on. But another show my mother has watched at least twice all the way through, The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel, which is a show that I looked at and said, it looks really well done. It looks beautifully shot. It's a period show, so that's interesting. Didn't really grab me right away. I was like, female comedian in the 60s. Okay, sounds interesting. I love the show. It truly is amazing. And if you like, this is a good way to kind of sell it to you, Jack. And I told Ryan about it in the same way, because his wife loves this show. And I'm shocked he didn't want to watch it with her. But if you like funny, snappy dialogue, like you would find in Neil Simon stuff, like the original Odd Couple film, where it's really sharp, funny dialogue and hysterical characters. Alex Borstein steals every episode as her extremely foul-mouthed friend and manager. Oh my God, she's brilliant. Her and Tony Shalhoub as Midge, the main character, the comedian, as Midge's father. Those are my two favorite characters in the show because they're always hysterical. As a period show, here's the interesting thing. Now, my mother was born, I'm going to out her in on this show, if anybody wants to know. My mother was born in 1946, so she was a teenager in the 60s. And, you know, there's a lot of stuff that you see criticized, like Mad Men, for instance. People do say, like, well, that's inauthentic in as much as kind of a very polished version of what life was like at that time. But from my mother's perspective, it really well represents the 60s in terms of fashion, in terms of attitude, as far as how things are presented. It's not kind of given a polish, so to speak, to make it fit in the 21st century frame of mind. She said everything looks great, and it is beautifully shot. I will say that. You can't say that about a lot of shows.
It looks gorgeous from what I've seen of it.
It looks amazing. The cast is amazing. There's not a weak link. There's a lot of really funny stuff. The dialogue is really sharp and funny. Just the way the period looked, it's so incredibly well done. But more than that, it's wildly entertaining just from the get go.
Yeah, we all watched it and she liked it a lot. But I feel like I have to watch it now because, like, you sold me on, we watched The Odd Couple this past summer.
Yeah, the original Odd Couple movie with Lemon and Matthau. And that was, I've been wanting to watch that with Ryan and Jack for a long time because I love that movie. I love basically everything Lemon and Matthau have done. But that movie,
The Old Men, for the first time in decades. God damn, it's so funny.
It's so funny.
Burgess Meredith. I forgot how funny Burgess Meredith was in the
hell yeah. Dude, I love that. Was the first movie of theirs I saw because I was, what, 12 when it came out? I think that was 93.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I watched it on, well, maybe I was 13 because I watched it on HBO when it premiered like a year later. But I thought these guys are so funny. And when I found out, like, they'd been around, when my mother explained, like, well, they did a movie, The Odd Couple, because I knew about the TV show. And she kind of said, oh, they worked together in a bunch of things. So this is the first time they gotten together. And then there were those movies that they did. They did Grumpier Old Man. They did Odd Couple 2. They did Out to Sea. And I loved all of those movies, which was fun. I actually got to watch Out to Sea for the first time with Sherry. I should say, well, our first time watching it together, but her first time watching it ever. She'd never seen it. I don't. It's one of those movies.
I've never seen it.
I don't know.
I gotta watch more of these movies.
Oh,
I've
dude,
seen a couple too. I don't think I even saw Grumpier Old Men. I just saw Grumpy Old Men.
Well, that's in the library as well that I yeah. that I logged you into. So definitely watch Grumpier Old Men, or maybe it's on HBO Max. I don't know. But Grumpy Old Men.
Yeah, both of them are on HBO Max.
Are they okay? Yeah. Anyway, so if you like the humor, like Neil Simon, sharp dialogue, Odd Couple, I feel like Marvelous Mrs. Maisel. That's a mouthful.
Yeah.
It really nails that type of sharp, funny dialogue and that quick back and forth that I love so much about something like the original Odd Couple film. Nothing new in 2020, but I think that third season came out in December. So it's one of those I was kind of like right on the cusp.
It qualifies, yeah.
It totally does. And that does it for shows for me. And you listed off all your shows. So that leaves now I get to take my WWE app moment. And
well, I got the big show still to talk about.
Oh, that's right. I forgot. Show hasn't run on long enough. We need to talk about Mandalorian.
Yeah. So I'll keep it brief. Look,
you want to end on Mandalorian or do you want to talk about it now?
No, I'll end on, I'll do this now. Then you
okay.
Can
let's talk about it. I love the show. We watched the whole series starting in, I think, beginning of November before the last two episodes came out. Sherry and I watched the entire thing. We watched the first episode last year when the series started, for whatever reason, didn't continue it. We have no excuse. But we watched...
A lot going on.
Was it eight?
We were living normally.
Yeah, exactly. There was life to live for a little while, and we just kind of forgot about the show, even though we were into it, or we were interested. What were there? There were eight, right? Both seasons are eight episodes?
Season, yeah.
So we watched 14 episodes in like 2 weeks, and then caught the final two episodes of season two the days they were released. So we caught up between episodes six and seven of season two. We watched the entire series up to that point and loved it. Everybody has an opinion about Mandalorian at this point, so I don't have a lot to add.
I love the first season, but this second season really kind of put over the top for me that Star Wars could be on the level on television, could be on the level of a film.
Like, totally.
I can anticipate it because it was coming back. I was like, oh, that's good. But you know, nothing's like a movie. That I was saying that all year. Like, it's a shame. I wish that maybe they had some, obviously there wouldn't be anything lined up because of the pandemic, but it's like, yeah, it's a shame. I just wish there was a movie to go with it too. Cause I always felt like as much as I enjoyed the first season, it's like, this is some Star Wars before the main course of Star Wars, which was episode 9 at the time.
Yeah.
And then I was, before we get to Mandalorian, I also want season 7 of the Clone Wars. Excellent. The last four episodes, the arc that they have that intersects with episode Revenge of the Sith, can't recommend it enough. And for people who are now seeing a lot of these characters in Mandalorian season 2 and are curious about the Ahsoka Tanos and the Bo-Katans and anything else, Clone Wars and Rebels, can't recommend them enough. But Mandalorian, just every episode felt like a movie event to me.
Totally.
I didn't think it was going to get better than the first episode. I loved the first episode of the season with Cobb Vanth because that character had been a minor character in the books. I'm like, oh, holy shit, they brought a book character in. And just that playing with the universe with the Tusken Raiders and the Tatooine and the Krayt Dragon and all those things you want to see. And even like the little details, like the dent on Boba Fett's backpack, because when Han hit the thing in Return of the Jedi, it's there. Everything is thought of. And like, it was just like the universe, like it was so well played with. And then every episode from five on, but from Ahsoka, just kept every single week was getting better and better. Cause I thought, The pattern, the way it was going, the first episode's going to be really big, then the next episode's going to drop off. Then it's going to be big, drop off. But from five on after Ahsoka, every week was just like, oh, man.
That was a big deal. And that was a big push for us to finally watch it.
Boba Fett cool. Like, I haven't been, like, well, not years even... as a fan. I was like, Boba Fett's okay, but, you know, I hate that everybody's got to buy his action figure. You can never find it on the shelf when I want to buy it. And it's like, why is he so this? He's a little overrated. And it's like, God damn, it's like he made me a fan of Boba Fett. Like, yes.
Yeah.
That's what
I'll say that. But that was the big push
better
to finally
we're going to do with another movie.
To finally catch up with the show. That was a big the Ahsoka Tano, is that her name? Am I getting it right?
Yes.
Okay. That's Sherry's favorite character aside from Princess Leia. Because she's a huge Clone Wars animated series fan.
That was a character that started maligned and hated and just
and grew into this, where everybody's going apeshit now that she's going to get her own series. And it didn't feel forced. It didn't feel like they were setting up like she's going to get her own series. It fit in where the arc was going. Yeah, it fits this narrative very, very well. That's what I mean. When they announced all these shows, it didn't feel forced. And even the final, everybody knows, I mean, you've heard about it by now, but even the idea of having a Boba Fett series now, it does make sense for where the show went.
Whatever they were going to do, because I think they were going to do a movie kind of like Solo with Boba Fett, and it just probably would have been like flew under the radar. Yeah, but it's there, kind of like. And I like Solo a lot, but it would have been one of those movies that's on the forgettable side of like, yeah, they made a Boba Fett movie too. This Book of Boba Fett, I cannot wait for this.
Well, after this setup, I'm with you. I never understood why people loved Boba Fett so much in the original movies. He never did anything.
And just that post-credit scene was like, oh my God, the way that they used Jabba's aide, his name is Bib Fortuna, just like that setup alone is just like, give me that.
Yeah, oh, and I bet you were cum-stained after watching that post-credit scene.
I watched it twice because I had to watch it because Noelle was so busy with stuff. I'm like, I'm not waiting for you.
Yeah. Fuck you, honey. I got to watch this right away.
You, my sister, and somebody else was like, you need to watch Mandalorian now. And I'm like,
I told you to film yourself watching that finale.
No.
Because I said, I need to see your reaction because I knew. I was like, he's going to cry as soon as he figures out it's Luke.
It's Luke Skywalker. It's Luke Skywalker. Oh, shit. It's Luke Skywalker. It was literally that. Like,
as soon as you saw that single ship.
It was like,
oh, great. We're saved. And Jack was like, yeah, you are.
Because, you know what, there was honestly rumors, like, people were saying it should be Luke that shows up, and I thought, no, because I want to keep the Skywalker saga separate, and this and that, whatever, but when it happened, it was like, oh, we're doing this, and it just, the build, and the heart beating, the anticipation, what sent me over to the edge was an R2 rolled in the room, because I didn't expect that, and I was just kind of like, yeah.
That's what Jack collapsed into.
Yeah, like, I mean...
Tear-soaked mess.
I think it was cool that Disney's got a money-making machine with this little guy. And they're just like, nope, we're going to send him away. Because now I'm even more excited because I love the character, but I'm excited to see the way that ended with the Darksaber of like, no, she just can't take it from you. It's like, oh.
Yeah, that's an incredible
the
setup.
The lore of this, I think it's going to end up in some big battle on Mandalore. And I'm like, I can't. Like, this is going to be epic.
I love the way they set up for more. I gotta say that
was well. I could totally see people being like, "Well, it was good when the baby was on." Like, no, we're gonna. No.
Yeah, they're gonna pretend this show jumped the shark.
Detractors, like, because I think some people did just watch it for the kid and.
Oh, there are people who watch it just to pick on the fact that Disney owns Star Wars, and then just to make fun of it for that. There are people who dismiss it based on that alone, which is ridiculous, especially because you finally showed Boba Fett being a badass.
Kathleen Kennedy is the devil, but the Mandalorian is great. You know she made the same thing, right?
Yeah, like, exactly.
She's responsible for greenlighting that.
Yeah, she's got a hand in that, too.
Yeah, read the art of the Mandalorian book, and they're like, she's great. She anything you want, she gets you. Like, yeah. But she's, you know, made a movie that I don't agree with. Anyway.
I will say that was fun watching that episode, because, yeah, the one where, again, everyone's seen Mandalorian, spoilers, even though Jack just said Luke Skywalker, but anyway. the episode, which was the sixth episode, where the child gets kidnapped, obviously, and where you see Boba Fett get his armor back and be super badass. As crazy exciting as that episode was, and that was like a movie in itself, that episode, like that was the one that felt like this is cinematic. I mean, the show overall feels so insanely cinematic, and I feel like they pulled that off in such a unique way.
There's no difference. Like,
exactly.
It looks no different to me than a feature film.
It does, yeah, and it totally works. And then the episode with Bill Burr and everything, like that episode was
crazy.
Which makes
me want to watch some Bill Burr stand-up comedy, because I hear he's not a fan of Star Wars. And
he's not! Well, that's why fanboys
get... bought him in as a rib. And it made me like his character more, because in the first season, like, oh yeah, he's in it, whatever, he's in it, he's in Star Wars. Like, now it's like, he's a good character.
Totally. But people, that's why people were pissed, because they're just like, he's not even a fan. He doesn't have to be a fan. He's an actor for hire. He doesn't need to be a fan to play. Do you think
Harrison
everybody?
Ford's not a fan either.
Exactly. But do you think everybody who's in a Marvel movie read the comic books? Hell no. As far as I know, the biggest fan is William Hurt, and he plays a character that shows up once in a while. So it's not like everybody needs to be a fan to be able to portray a character. And clearly, he did such a kick-ass job of it that it didn't matter. But
absolutely.
So anyway, really quick, just to put a button on the Mandalorian thing. So the funny thing is, we caught up, and at the point, the sixth episode of season two. The child gets kidnapped. Boba Fett has his armor back. And then it's like, oh, shit, what are we going to do now? Fast forward. At that point, I think we finished that up on Wednesday night. So we knew we had a day until we were going to watch the next episode at 3 a.m. because we knew we were going to stay up to watch it because we're night owls anyway.
I'm doing that with every Star Wars series from now on. I'm getting up 5 a.m.
I bet you are. I bet you are.
And I'll watch it again that night with Noelle because it's painful. It sounds like first world problems, but it's like, it's painful to sit off of social media all day when you know, like, the most awesome
that part,
on, and you're like, I can't talk about it because I have to sucks. Wait till 6 o'clock when she's done with work.
It sucks. And that was the frustrating part. Like, when we saw the finale, it was Luke Skywalker immediately. We watched that at like 3:01. We were waiting for it. And immediately people have photos of Luke. They have Luke Skywalker was trending. Mark Hamill was trending. And I'm like, see, this is why I did want to watch this. Aside from the fact that I genuinely am interested in the show, but I want to avoid spoilers. And frankly, it was the same with Endgame. Why I went and saw it by myself on Thursday night, because I said, people are going to be all over it. And sure enough, the next day it was RIP Tony Stark was trending. And I'm like, son of a bitch, I hope people don't see this, because we were going to see it on Saturday.
I blocked myself off of social media.
But that's it.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, that's the society we live in. And that's when it comes to talking about big events like this, it's hard to avoid. But anyway, just to, what I said was going to be putting a button on the Mandalorian. So anyway, we watched The Child Got Kidnapped, and we had, you know, another day in between when the next episode was coming. And it was whatever time. And I curled up in bed and said goodnight to Sherry. And then I'm laying there, got my eyes closed. She's still sitting upright in bed, just sitting. She's not on her phone. She's just sitting, looking straight ahead, you know, kind of hands in her lap, looking straight ahead. I'm like, okay, she's not ready to wind down yet, but she's not playing on her phone. So I kind of open my eyes because I notice she hasn't moved at all from this position. I look at her and I said, you're worried about the child, aren't you? I am. She was sitting up in bed, worried about what was happening to
my sister texted Grogu. Me that day. Was like, I'm so sad about the baby. I'm like, he's gonna be like, I'm like, Natalie, this is gonna happen. She's like, no, I didn't know it was gonna happen. I'm like, Natalie, it always happens.
There was
where
a point.
Where does drama come from? Like, but Boba Fett kicked the shit out of everybody. She's like, right. But the baby, did you not fucking know? And she's not a massive Star Wars fan, but I'm like, mm-hmm. How could you walk away from that and not think that was the coolest fucking thing Boba Fett's ever done?
Yeah,
the baby's gonna be like, you have to kidnap the baby. I thought it was gonna be the cliffhanger of the season. Like, oh,
I did too.
I'm gonna take him, and we're gonna have to wait a year, maybe. Even more to be like, what's gonna happen to
I said that I said you know what they wrapped up season one
for it.
They wrapped up season one nicely, and I said, you know, this season's gonna have a cliffhanger, right? And it didn't. I mean, obviously, yeah, they wrapped up the Grogu story,
yeah,
but
yeah,
there's the whole thing with the Darksaber and everything that's gonna happen with that, which leaves you wondering. But I said, they're gonna end it on a cliffhanger. We're not gonna know how this resolves itself. They're gonna be a cliffhanger with Moff Gideon, there's gonna be a cliffhanger with the child not getting back to the Mandalorian and all this other stuff. But obviously,
one of them
was
going to die in that episode too. Like, somebody's not making it off of this thing. Like, Cara Dune.
I thought so too.
And I'm like, somebody's.
Yeah, that finale was one of the best movies of 2020, if I'm being honest. But anyway, let me wrap this episode up with calling out a few albums that I loved from 2020. Jack doesn't like music, so Jack only likes countdowns that happened on the 80s channels on Sirius XM. He's only interested in music from 1987. But I have a couple albums that came out in 2020 that I want to call out for being awesome.
Maybe I'll check them out.
The big one for me, because there was so much anticipation about it, and because it was pushed back in light of the pandemic, and it was kind of an open secret. Everybody knew it was coming, but Power Up from AC/DC. Loved it. I love that Brian Johnson is still such a kick-ass singer and maintains that voice he was 72 at the time. He's now 73. It's awesome. It's exactly what you want. It's that AC/DC stomp. The songs sound like AC/DC. They just released the first song off the album, actually realized as a single. It immediately just hit me as soon as
I heard
the
Shot
album
in the
started.
Dark.
Shot in the Dark's a good song, too. I mean, all of it
part
is.
Part of a wrestling pay-per-view. It was like, oh.
Of course it was.
No, but it was cool. It's like, oh, cool. Brian Johnson's still doing it, because I thought he was deaf and couldn't do it.
This is probably their last album. I wouldn't be surprised if it was. They're going to do another tour sometime next year. That was part of the plan. They were going to be touring this year too. But
with Brian Johnson? Or?
Sure. Well, he's not deaf, but he also has in-ear monitors and everything. Like, he's able to handle things better than I think they gave him credit for at the time. But I think they know at the same time kind of where their bread is buttered. They know that people want to see Brian Johnson fronting AC/DC and not Axl Rose so much.
Go out on a note then. Like, if you want to go out, like, if this is like well praised and everything else, it's like, how much better could it get?
Yeah, do the victory lap tour. That's fine. I get it. I mean, the fact they got the band back too. They got back, you know, Phil Rudd on drums, Cliff on bass. You know, it's awesome that they were able to make that lineup happen. Loved it. I love
I've
the album.
Them live.
It's awesome. Oh, that's a good one. I've seen them live twice.
I like AC/DC. I'm not a big fan because I feel like some of the songs get played to death or some that just don't hit with me. But I would love to see them live. Like, I feel a lot of their songs are like,
they're a must see.
Yeah,
because you're going
to
know
a lot of their songs are played to death. It's like, you get it. We get it. It's,
yeah. Like, I would but love that's, to see that, them live. That's radio's fault. And the fact that people only want to hear the same four songs they like of AC/DC. But
yeah,
you're going to know every song when you go see the concert. Another album that got pushed back, which I was very happy, finally got released in, boy, I think it was September. It was supposed to come out in May, and it got pushed, was Liam Gallagher's MTV Unplugged album, which I'm sorry they didn't release the full concert as a DVD or on YouTube or something, because I really enjoyed that, because his two solo albums have been really good. So it's five solo songs on the album and five Oasis songs, which are awesome, hearing it with the string section and acoustic, and his voice still sounds great too. That was a long time coming, especially because the Oasis Unplugged concert that he bailed on never saw an official release. It aired on TV, but the fact that he bailed out on it, it was kind of nice to see him doing some of these songs acoustically with a string section and his solo material too. Two Whitesnake albums got released in 2020 with some new material. Now, what they're doing, and the third volume in this Red, White, and Blues trilogy, the third volume was just announced. It comes out next month, like I think February 12th or something. But they did the Rock album and they did the Love album. Now, the cool thing about these albums are they are compilations, but the fascinating thing was there's an engineer who remixed the original songs. So Gone is the kind of drenched in reverb 80s polish that was on Still of the Night and Is This Love and all of that stuff. The albums sound consistent because they're taking music from the 80s, 90s, 2000s, and the 2010s, and they're mixed so they sound consistent. So it sounds like a Whitesnake album that could have just come out now. And David Coverdale is one of those guys who's maintained his voice so incredibly well, and thankfully finally got to see Whitesnake in concert in 2019. But it gives a consistency to music that spans four decades, which is something that's frankly unheard of, but there are certain things they added. They added some keyboard parts. They added some guitar parts. They added a little bit of a different flavor, but hearing these remixed songs, the remix of Still in the Night is awesome. In Park is actually ends. It doesn't just fade out at the end. It carries on. It has this big bombastic rock ending to it, which sounds great. And without all the reverb and everything, it sounds like a band in the studio. Yeah, there's still big guitars and big drums and everything, but there's not that 80s production where there's a lot of echo and reverb and everything, where a lot of albums sounded the same in that decade. But the fact that the material from 1987 sounds similar enough to the material from 2019 is awesome. So they did the Rock album and they did the Red album, which is the Love album, with songs that you know, like Is This Love and things like that. That just came out near the end of the year. And yeah, the Blues album with songs like Crying in the Rain, that is coming out next month. Really looking forward to that because it's a very consistent listening experience if you want a crash course in basically everything Whitesnake. I loved them. I think they sound really, really cool. And as a compilation, they hold together broken up by rock and then by love songs and ballads and then the more kind of blues rock influenced songs like Crying in the Rain and things like that. I look forward to that.
Cool.
And last but certainly not least, another one that was just spontaneously released upon us was Letter to You by Bruce Springsteen, which is awesome because it's Bruce Springsteen and it's the E Street Band. And what more can you say? I'm a huge Springsteen fan. I loved it. Frankly, I should listen to it more and more, if I'm being honest, because it is just a really strong album. And it was another huge lift. Just like with AC/DC, it was a big lift in 2020 where it's, oh, something positive came out of this, something that makes you feel connected to humanity in a way that only Springsteen can pull off, in my opinion. I know there's a lot of songwriters out there that people look at as being able to communicate the human experience better, but you know what? Bruce is the guy for me. Anyway, that wraps it up for albums. Want to call out five albums. I probably should have included the Iron Maiden Double Live album that came out in November, but I actually just got it. But I'm sure it's great because I saw them on that tour. And that's it. That sums it up, folks. That's a very, very long, bloated version of what we loved and didn't like in 2020. But there was a lot to take away from.
If it was a real year, where it'll be even more.
I know. Next year, we'll actually be able to talk about, you know, hopefully going to the movies and going to concerts, things like that. Hopefully
we have to do a whole Ghostbusters Afterlife episode. Just
that's
on that alone.
That's probably inevitable. Please support the show at patreon.com/capepod. For as little as $2 a month, you can get some exclusives and help support the show for our various pursuits from here on out. hey, you heard Jack wax on forever about wrestling stuff. Maybe Jack's going to do a supplemental wrestling show down the line.
Maybe
Cape is going to build out to a lot more stuff. I've been pressuring Andrew to do something exclusively for the Cape and the Only Podcast That Matters audience. And yeah, if you're a fan of the Only Podcast That Matters, there will be exclusives down the line, some archival stuff that you've never seen or heard, which has been a lot of fun to rediscover. My new computer and consolidating files, that's a whole other story. And we've gone on long enough this week.
It's a treasure trove, people.
It is. There's a lot more than I thought was in there when I started putting everything together. But we can talk about that at another time. But if you're interested in more of Jack's nonsense, you can follow Jack on Twitter at JackWagon85 and on Instagram at JacksonFigure1985. You can follow me on Twitter at Chris Abalo and on Instagram at Chris Sells Out, and follow the show at Cape Pod on Twitter and Instagram as well. Please subscribe to the show if you haven't already. If you happen to stumble upon this episode, make sure you subscribe through Apple Podcasts or Google Podcasts or whatever your preferred podcast app is, so that you get the new shows every Monday when they go out. Follow, like, subscribe, share, all that good stuff. Let everybody know the good news and how much you're entertained by us carrying on and on about the stuff we love and hate. And we'll be back with more of that next week. So, until next time, for Jack DeFranco, this is Chris Abalo, and this was yet another experiment.